A new Marquette Law School poll finds Republican Governor Scott Walker leading Democratic candidate Mary Burke 48-41% in the run-up to the gubernatorial election next fall. Not much has changed in terms of the numbers since the previous poll. We're going to talk about that, but there's a whole lot more to this poll than just the governor's race, and we want to get into some of those issues as well. Joining me to talk about this new poll is Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School poll and professor of law and public policy. He's the co-founder of Pollster.com and founder of PollsandVotes.com. Professor, welcome back to the Joy Cardine program.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
So as we saw in the numbers and we heard in Chuck Quirnbach's story, no huge shifts in the way we look at the governor's race since the January edition of your poll. What do you make of this relative consistency? Is this the hobgoblin of little minds, or is there something else going on here?
Well, I think we see fair stability in the race since Mary Burke announced her run in October. Governor Walker, over those three polls, has had 47% in October, 47% in January, 48% now in March. So very little movement there. Burke began at 45% right after her announcement, but has been at 41% in both January and March. So there's not much movement overall, even though it was a two-point race in October and now a seven-point today. But I think you're seeing relative stability in people's evaluations of the governor, who they know very well, and only the beginnings of getting to know Mary Burke as a candidate. Her name recognition is improving, but it's still a far ways from the universal knowledge of Governor Walker that we see.
Yeah, and Governor Walker's job approval numbers tightened up just a little bit, 51% approved, 42% disapproved in January. Now it's 47-47. Is there any significance to this? To what do you attribute to this little bit of a slide here?
Yeah, I do think that is interesting, given that the vote didn't move, or by just a point, which is well inside the margin of error. But the job approval did shift some. There are two ways to look at that. One is that in January, we were polling the week after the new budget surplus was discovered, and just as the governor was proposing large tax cuts, which were popular proposals. So it may be that January is a bit of a high point, and he did improve a bit from October to January, so maybe that's consistent with it. The other way to look at it is we've just almost reached the end of a very contentious legislative session. It may be that some of the events surrounding that play a role. And then finally, the new jobs numbers for the state came out just before we were interviewing, and so that may play some small role as well.
The speaking of the tax cuts that were part of the governor's proposal back in January, looks like most of us like that $500 million tax cut, but we don't think it will benefit us.
Well, apparently not. 55% said they were in favor of the tax cut, 34% opposed. Those are very similar numbers to what we saw when we asked about the tax cuts that were passed last year. And so I think we have a steady just over 50%, between 50 and 60 anyway, who are pretty happy that these cuts are going through at all. But we do ask, and have for a while asked a question, do you think tax cuts primarily benefit the poor, the middle class, or the wealthy? And for several months now, as we've asked this question, the wealthy come out by 58% as being seen as the beneficiary of tax cuts. So there's a little bit of an interesting difference between, in principle, saying tax cuts benefit the wealthy, but when a tax cut goes through, even one with fairly widespread benefits but fairly modest-sized dollar amounts for individuals, nevertheless, people are pretty approving of that.
Now, one number that didn't really change from the January survey is the number of people who think the state's on the right track. 54% say the state is on the right track. I guess it's a little bit of a puzzle to me, but then a lot of life is a puzzle to me, quite frankly. But how can 54% say that we're on the right path, but only 47% approve of the guy in charge?
Yeah, I agree that there is some peculiar things here, but they're peculiar in the way that voters, citizens, can look at different aspects of the state or politics and come to somewhat different conclusions about it. So we found, you know, that 54% said right direction, 42% wrong track. That was a slight tick up from 40% wrong track 2 months ago. But when we ask about that question, we're trying to get a sense of the broad direction of the state, not just one particular area. When you ask how's the job Scott Walker is doing, you're focusing on a particular politician and, of course, one that for whom the partisan split is especially strong. When we look at jobs, we see more skepticism. When we look at tax cuts, we see relative enthusiasm. So I think the main point of all of this variation that you see is that voters don't fit in a single, completely consistent view of the world. They see aspects of it, and those aspects differ depending on the individual circumstances or, you know, the little bit of their lives that this particular issue touches on. You know, if you listen to politicians or, you know, political leaders, they push hard the idea that either everything is going rosy or everything is going bad. Voters have a somewhat more variegated perspective on the world.
Here's a comment from Ryan on Facebook who writes, if the Republicans aren't trampling on democracy with restricting voter rights, it's with millions and millions of special interest dollars for misleading ads. Unfortunately, the General Electric falls for Walker's tricks and continues to vote against their own best interest. How representative is someone like Ryan of voters' views?
Well, it's a view you hear from Democrats and progressives quite a bit. And, you know, there is a lot of money in politics. There's a lot on both sides, but Republicans certainly have more, you know, their share of that money. But I think the broader question is the idea that the public is fundamentally being fooled or misguided, whether it's by money or by politicians, as opposed to they just don't agree with me. It's a little easier to say they're misguided rather than come to the conclusion that a majority of your fellow citizens don't agree with you on something. So I think you see this argument from both sides of the aisle all the time that the other side is either foolish and misguided or positively evil. And I'd at least like to hold out the possibility that maybe we just don't agree on some things. I like anchovies on my pizza. You might not agree with me on that.
I'll pass on the anchovies though. extra green peppers for me. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have more with Charles Franklin and with you if you choose to join us. When you saw the news about the poll, what did you think? And who would you vote for if the election were held today, and why? Are you still on the fence? Are you hoping for a Democratic or Republican primary? And more importantly, I think this is the key question: which issues actually matter to you in this election? What's going to help you make a decision when you go in to cast your vote in November? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org, or you can do what Ryan did earlier this morning and join us on Facebook. Look for the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page and leave your comment or question there. Lots more to get into on this poll, including our opinion on legalizing marijuana and gay marriage and a whole bunch of other stuff to talk about as well, connected with this Marquette University Law School poll. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. We're talking about a new Marquette University Law School poll this hour on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Charles Franklin joins me in the studio. He's the director of the Marquette University Law School poll and professor of law and public policy, co-founder of Pollster.com and the founder of PollsandVotes.com. Well, a few more takes on the governor and the governor's race, and then there's some other really fascinating aspects of this poll that I want to make sure that we get to, but this is the headline, so we'll stick with it for just a moment longer. Most people are not expecting the state to reach the governor's 250,000 jobs pledge by the end of his first term. Do you think the governor is vulnerable at all on the job creation question?
Yeah, that view is as close to consensual of the whole state as anything we've found. 80% say we will not reach the jobs goal. Just 13% think we will. That's unchanged, really. It was 1479 in January. That's what the economic numbers tell us. We're too far away to add that many in such a short time. I think the bigger question is the impact that has on people's votes. We followed the question by asking, would this jobs pledge be an important element of your vote choice in November? 29% said it'd be very important, and 44% said somewhat. 14 and 12 said not very and not at all. But whether that actually changes votes is the important question. Many more Democrats say it's very important for their vote, but it seems unlikely that Governor Walker was winning their votes in the first place. Likewise, we saw that Republicans were more likely to discount the importance of the pledge, and that's a way of backing away from it and saying, yeah, we're not going to reach it, but, you know, it's not that important to me. So the psychology of how people deal with failing to reach this, I think, is important. On the Democratic side, of course, the campaign argument is a pledge not reached. And the question is, will they be able to use that argument effectively? And in particular, can the Burke campaign give voters a reason to see Governor Walker and his policies as responsible for falling short?
Well,
the governor puts it, other people are responsible.
Well, the governor blames the Democrats. He says it's all those recalls in the first 2 years, and that's why we aren't going to hit the target. And so it becomes a question of whose argument you're going to buy.
That's exactly right. And that's where Democrats will buy the Democratic argument. Republicans will buy the governor's argument. Independents would be left to figure something out for themselves. But I do think that there's this broader question of responsibility and how well the governor has governed. And that's the sort of debate that campaigns in general are often made of. When you have an incumbent seeking reelection, and in this governor's case, practically a second reelection bid, voters have a chance to sit back and reconsider what they think of that governor, putting in place or potentially changing the views they've had in previous elections. Or they say, look, I'm still satisfied with this guy. There's no reason to move. That, I think, is going to be the linchpin of the campaign, is whether we have a reassessment of Governor Walker that could lead to more negativity towards him, or a reassessment in which people who are either on the fence or have been leaning Democratic come to the opposite conclusion that, on balance, they support him. That'll be the difference between, a 50-50 race and a 55-45 race that could tip either direction.
Well, and the fact that Mary Burke isn't really very well known to very many people, if she has the opportunity to frame her candidacy with the voters, that would be to her advantage, since most people have already made up their minds what they think about the governor, according to your poll. On the other hand, it also offers the opportunity for the Walker campaign to create a narrative about her that could frame it in a different way. So that part of the race is should be very interesting going forward.
And that part of the race is what has just gotten underway, with particularly around $1 million, I understand, of Republican Governors Association ads attacking Burke, and apparently a considerably smaller media buy by Burke and the governor's campaign. But we're beginning to see a little bit of movement on this. Back in October, when she first got in the race, 70% said they didn't know who Burke was, couldn't give an opinion about her. That was still 70% in January. But now, after 2 months and that bit of media and the time that she's been getting news coverage, she's improved her visibility a little bit. It's from down from 70 to 59 who say they don't know enough about her to rate her. And that process will continue throughout the year as voters begin to pay more attention as the campaign itself ramps up. And that will be the critical time for creating in voters' minds an idea of who Mary Burke is and what she stands for. And both sides, of course, as you said, are going to tussle over how to define her.
Now, since your last poll, we had the release of tens of thousands of documents and emails related to the John Doe investigation from when Scott Walker was Milwaukee County Executive. More than half of those surveyed said it didn't change their opinion of the governor. 43% said the release made them less favorable, it made their viewpoint less favorable. And are these groups pretty much split along party affiliation?
Yes, as you would again expect, there's an awful lot of selective perception of people seeing things from a partisan lens. Having said that, whether it's the 53 saying no difference or the 43 saying didn't matter or it made them less favorable, both of those numbers are larger than the pure partisans in the state. So these are effects that spill over. Even if you subtracted out the pure partisan results, there's still voters out there who are persuadable, who are looking at this, and a small majority say no difference, but a pretty significant fraction, 43%, say less favorable.
A Rasmussen poll that was conducted shortly after the email release showed Walker and Burke tied at 45%. Now, I know that wasn't your poll, but do you suspect people's opinions may have briefly changed and then they just kind of brushed it off?
Well, knowing why polls move is always a good question, even for those of us who do it. The why is a hard part. Rasmussen was just a week or two ago, so I think it was not immediately on the heels of the email release. I think a way to reconcile these, if people are in a reconciling mood, is to say if the race is currently really a four-point race, then it's perfectly plausible to get a poll that's a tie, 45-45, and also to get polling that's a seven-point race, what we have. Obviously, I am a bit of a partisan for my poll, but I think the broader point is, regardless of which you look at, this many months away from the campaign, from the election, we're talking about a race that is very clearly competitive, one where the governor has been stable in the high 40s, but not over 50, one where Mary Burke has a pretty good floor of support even when she wasn't known. So whether this turns out in the end to be a 7-point win for the governor, or whether it becomes a 50-50 race, or whether it becomes a multi-point win for Mary Burke, isn't going to be determined by either the Rasmussen poll or ours at this point. Rather, it's going to be what do the campaigns do and how do voters react to that campaign. I think the way to look at what the polling is showing is this is where voters are today, and these issues that we're talking about are in many ways the far more important ones because they're the things that are going to structure the campaign conversation going forward. What do voters think about particular issues? Where is the governor strong? Where is he weak? Where are Burke's positions resonating with voters, and where are they falling flat? That'll really shape the campaign over the coming months.
Yeah, and Mary Burke just announced her own jobs program or plan just this week, and whatever poll happens next may reveal whether people were paying attention to that or not. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, talk@WPR.org. And Facebook are all three great ways to get in touch with the program. Let us know what you think. Who would you vote for if the election were held today and why? Are you still on the fence? And what issues are important to you in this election? What are the issues that are going to drive you to the polls and cause you to vote? We're just about at news time, but a quick question before we get to the news. Carol writes on Facebook, she wanted to know if there was a question on the poll about campaign finance, because she says getting big money out of politics should be a priority. Did you ask any questions about campaign finance?
No, we did not. Money in politics is, of course, a huge issue, but it seems at the moment largely in the hands of the Supreme Court.
Okay. Well, we're going to continue our discussion on this most recent Marquette Law School poll, and we haven't touched on too much of what the legislature did. I know there's some questions about that in the poll, so we'll get to finding out what people thought about this legislature, and we'll also talk about some of the other issues that were released or that were covered in the poll, things like whether what we think about legalization of marijuana, that might surprise you a little bit, and even what we would do if we were going to go to the polls again and vote on that constitutional amendment about gay marriage. That's going to be an interesting discussion as well. Please join us, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Charles Franklin and I will be back in just a few minutes. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The latest Marquette University Law School poll is out, and we're talking about it this hour with Charles Franklin, director of the poll, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University. And we've been talking a lot about the governor's race, Scott Walker and Mary Burke running against each other for governor next fall, although the governor in a news conference or an interview yesterday said he wasn't even a candidate yet. So I thought that was an interesting thing to say. Technically, I guess that's true. One of the things that you asked about on the poll was voter ID. That's something that's come up in the legislature before. The governor has indicated that he would call a special legislative session to deal with voter ID. Well, how do we feel about using an ID to vote, according to your poll?
Sure. Quite positively. So in that, he's got public opinion behind him. 60% support a photo, the way we phrased it, a government-issued photo ID in order to vote. So 60% in favor, 36% opposed. The last time we asked about that was in May of 2012, and it was 61-37 then. So I find the interesting part there is that the photo ID law, of course, was originally passed. Has been tied up in the court since. There have been strong arguments on both sides about it that have ultimately absolutely failed to move the needle anywhere on this bill or on the law. So neither side has managed to shift opinion in their direction. And at the same time, by almost a 2-to-1 margin, voters seem to think that photo ID is a reasonable requirement for voting. And that's come despite arguments against it that focus on the elderly and people who have a hard time finding a birth certificate. But it also hasn't gone up in response to the arguments from the supporters that getting an ID is not that hard. It's no infringement on voting, and it ensures the fairness of elections. So those two arguments really have fought to a stalemate on this issue and not moved public opinion at all.
Now, one of the other issues that the legislature did deal with was early voting, also called in-person absentee voting. And you did some polling on this. How did we do?
Yeah, voters come down pretty solidly on the side of more early voting, not less. We offered four options, three of which were tailored to recent practice, and one which is an old traditional one. So prior to 2011, for several years, we had had a process that included 3 weeks of early voting and three weekends. 39% preferred that. Starting in 2011, we shifted to 2 weeks with one weekend. 27% approved of that. what the legislature has passed, and it's awaiting the governor's either signature or veto, is 2 weeks with no weekends. 12% prefer that. And the old traditional option of no early voting at all, you have to go to the polls on Tuesday, still has 20% support. So if you put those together, 66% would prefer either the current system of 2 weeks and a weekend or going back to 3 weeks and a weekend. 32% would approve of what the legislature has passed or something that limits early voting even more.
So a plurality, though, would like to see us continue some form of early voting.
A solid majority would prefer early voting at least at the level that we currently have it and not further restricting it. Now, one thing is, if you look at where do people early vote, early voting is as prominent, if not more prominent, more frequent in some of the more Republican counties, some of the most Republican counties of the state. It's not merely a phenomena of Democratic areas. In the legislative debate, Democrats in particular have excuse me, pointed to this as a potential restriction on voting, and it has particular impact in the urban areas. But if you actually look, and the governor himself has pointed this out, an awful lot of Republican voters take advantage of early voting as well. So I think that's reflected in the public opinion here, that at least when it's not posed as a Democrat versus Republican issue, but simply how much early voting would you like, 2/3 of the public like early voting and would like at least what we have, if not more.
Well, it's been my experience. I'm very grateful for early voting because it's been my experience over the last several elections that I'm often out of town on election day. And so it's a pretty convenient way to cast your ballot if you don't have to wait for a specific day. You can go in, show your ID or whatever, and cast your vote and be done. And that's pretty slick.
And by their behavior, we certainly see an awful lot of the public that's with you on that. The convenience and the ability to do it at your schedule rather than on a single Tuesday or a more restricted weekday time is popular among voters.
Okay. Let's take some phone calls, and there's still room for you to join us if you'd like to. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. We'll start with Charles in Wausau. Charles, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about methodology. If you look at the demographics of the two parties, the Democratic voters tend to skew a little younger and a little more tech savvy. And I wonder, when you do a poll like this, do you account for the possibility that Republicans and conservatives are less likely to have traded in their landline telephones for a cell phone? I have a feeling that when you try to reach people by landlines, you're going to get, in a random sampling, more conservatives than younger Democrats.
Right. That's
in the poll.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. That's a great question, because this is exactly right. Cell phone penetration and use has been growing, of course. I don't really need to go into that. But it's now about 30%, 33% of the state who is cell phone only. But when you look at younger people, the percentage is massive, over 60%. This is why in our polls we include cell phones. Cell phones make up about 40% of our final sample. And to no one's surprise, most of the young people we interview are actually interviewed by cell phone. Most of the older people are interviewed by landline. But we use both so that regardless of which kind of phone you're using, we have a statistically reliable chance to get in touch with you.
Thanks so much for that call. Let's take a call quickly from Matt in Oconomowoc. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Professor Franklin.
Good morning.
I want to talk about what I see is going to be very little change in the race from here to the end of the election, and it's because of the people in the state who can't make an opinion about some of the candidates. You commented that Mary Burke's number in that regard is 59%, correct, in this latest poll?
That's right.
But what is Paul Ryan's percent of that question?
Yeah, he's... Not quite as low or as high. 25% didn't know Ryan, but 44% didn't know Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson.
And Ron Johnson is at, what, 44 or something?
Correct.
I mean, Paul Ryan ran for vice president of the United States, and 25% of your sample can't form an opinion. That tells me that there's a large percentage of the electorate that are essentially no information voters. And how do you persuade someone that doesn't pay attention?
Sure. That's a great question. And you see a cycle in the awareness of folks. A month before he was picked for vice president, 35% didn't know Paul Ryan. But by the time we got to November, that was down to just about 4 or 5% that didn't have an opinion about him. So you see this in election cycles regularly, that between elections, a lot of us don't pay that much attention to the congressman or even the senator. In contrast, someone like Scott Walker, only 4 or 5% say they don't have an opinion. So Mary Burke is in the early stages of her campaign. She's never run statewide. Going from 70% to now 59% who don't know her is part of the natural process over the calendar year that will lead by Election Day to relatively few, probably under 10%, who won't have formed an opinion of her by then. So I think it's a good question about what it means for voters to be very episodic in their attention to politics, and particularly to the things that go on in government between elections. But I think that's sort of the natural state of the world, if you will. It's a natural law rather than something that we can easily change. But the key thing from an elections point of view is that voters acquire that information before they're called on to go into the voting booth.
Matt, thanks for that great question. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Charles Franklin is my guest. He's the director of the Marquette University Law School Poll and a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University. He and I are, and you are discussing the latest results from the Marquette University Law School Poll. Still to come after our next break here, which we'll just take in just a moment, I want to talk about some of the other, perhaps a little more esoteric issues that your poll covered, and we'll talk about those results. 800-642-1234, the number to call if you want to join us. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about the new Marquette University Law School poll with you and with Charles Franklin, who's the director of the poll. He's also a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University. Joins me in the studio this morning. Okay, so there were some other issues that your poll considered. One of them I thought was pretty interesting. You asked, in 2006, Wisconsin approved a constitutional amendment which banned same-sex marriage, and the margin was 59% to 41%. Now, you asked, if that amendment were brought up for a new vote today, only 36% would continue the ban and 59% would vote to repeal the amendment. But wait, there's more. Only 48% of respondents favored allowing marriage for gay couples. So explain all this.
Sure. Well, first of all, we know from massive amounts of national data and a fair amount of Wisconsin data that same-sex marriage is an area that's undergone one of the sharpest shifts in public opinion over the last 20 years of really any issue in the history of polling. So where we find ourselves today is with a clear plurality, sometimes a majority, sometimes just under a majority, who supports marriage for gay couples. But then you have an in-between category. In this latest poll, 24% would support civil unions but not marriage, and 24% that would call for no legal recognition of gay relationships. So where do you fall when you're asked about an amendment to ban gay marriage or to repeal that? The supporters that, as you point out, 59% in this case, are a combination of the 48% who are clearly for marriage and some share of the civil unions people, the 24% in that category, who may have some trouble with marriage, but favor some kind of legal recognition. And so for them, some would prefer to repeal the ban, but that doesn't mean that they would necessarily be supporters of marriage itself.
Now, you, I understand that you also asked, you had a question in the poll about the weather. What do we, I would think that the universal answer would be no. I mean,
well, given that weather forecast you read just a minute ago, I think that should be universal.
That was the clown car weather forecast. Things just kept jumping out of it at me.
Exactly. We did ask a question. Do you think this has been a colder than average, about average, or warmer than average winter in the county that you live in, to pick up a little bit of regional variation? 89% said it had been colder than average, and I'm pretty convinced the rest must have spent the winter in Florida.
Or Arizona.
Or Arizona, exactly.
Yeah.
It's not quite a frivolous question. We actually are following that with some questions about perceptions of climate change. We had asked a similar question in 2012 after the unusually warm summer. And so the comparison here is, how do people think about climate change after they've just gone through a very hot and dry summer versus how do they feel about climate change after we've gone through a really cold winter? So we didn't engineer the weather either time. It's not our fault, but we did take advantage of that natural experiment.
Well, I'm glad you're not taking responsibility for the weather, and neither am I. But what did you find out then in comparing the summer and winter answers?
Yeah, the shifts in the perceptions of climate are really pretty modest. About 57% in this sample said temperatures have been going up over the last 100 years. That's very similar to what we saw in 2012. But the last follow-up is, how sure are you that temperatures are going up? Or if you said you don't believe temperatures are going up, how sure are you that they're not going up? And I think the really interesting result was that those who think temperatures are going up were considerably more sure about that. Those who said there'd been no change in temperatures were considerably less sure. And I think that's an interesting part of the climate change debate that gets missed in just the simple argument of yes or no. There's also a factor of confidence in that finding.
And another key polling question for a lot of people was you asked about minimum wage, and it looks like a lot of us favor increase in the minimum wage. Very few of us oppose an increase. But what difference is that going to make when we go to the polls? Is this an issue we're willing to pull the lever on?
That's right. We had asked about it in January as well. It really didn't change. 63% favored an increase, 33% opposed. And I stress that our question says some people argue that we should increase the minimum wage in order to help low-income earners. Other people argue that increasing the minimum wage would cause businesses to reduce jobs. So it's a balanced question, reminding people that there is an argument here. Nonetheless, by almost a 2-to-1 ratio, people prefer increasing. We then asked people, if a candidate supports increasing minimum wage, would that make you more or less likely to vote for them? 34% said more likely, 16% less. We also asked voters, if a candidate opposes increasing, would that make you more or less? 21% more, 34% less. So I think you see in that comparison that not only is opinion on balance in favor of an increase, but when people think about candidates, there's a pretty strong advantage to a pro-increase candidate and a 21 to 34 disadvantage to people who oppose it.
Any interesting dynamic there in terms of the demographics of who supports minimum wage and who doesn't?
You do find, I think, the expected relationship with income. Lower income earners are, not too surprisingly, more in favor of minimum wage increases. But when you have a 2-to-1 margin, you're really picking up support across a surprising range of the political spectrum. It's not really isolated support in just one group, though, of course, it's higher in some groups than in others. But either majorities or near majorities across quite a spectrum.
Now, you also had a polling question about the legalization of marijuana. Last October, the poll found 50% favored legalization, 45% opposed. In this poll, legalization supported by 42% and 52% say it should remain illegal. So that's a flip since October. What do you attribute that to?
Yeah, it's possible that as the possibility of legalization has become more of a serious policy issue. Obviously, other states have legalized recently. There's at least a bill has been introduced in the legislature, though it hasn't moved, that maybe people are taking this a little more seriously, thinking about it and hearing arguments. The Colorado governor, Colorado being a state that recently legalized, was quoted in the news recently talking to other governors saying, this is not an easy decision and you should not rush into it, even though his state has chosen to legalize. So I think there is an issue there and maybe some evolution of opinion. The other thing could be purely methodological. When we asked about it in October, we asked about it on half of our respondents, 400 instead of our full sample of 800. So it's also possible that this is a fluke of sampling. But in the bigger picture, I would imagine a lot of evolution on this issue will take place if it comes up for a serious legislative debate.
Now, just so no one accuses me of trying to end the program on a high note, I'll ask one more question. when are you going to be doing the next poll, and what will you be looking for then?
John, you should be ashamed of yourself for that
line. I'm quite regularly ashamed of myself, and yet I continue to do this kind of stuff.
Well, I appreciate it at least. It's almost as bad as mine. We will be in the field about every 2 months until we get closer to the election, and then we'll ramp up the polling as the campaign ramps up. Also, if some dramatic event takes place, we can always drop in and do a poll quickly if something unusual happens.
And where can people read the entire poll results if they'd like to dig into the weeds on this?
Sure, and there are a lot of weeds there. The website is law.marquette.edu/poll, P-O-L-L, and the basic results are on that landing page. There's also a tab for results and data where you can read the full questionnaire, the methodology, the results for every single question, as well as voluminous crosstabs broken down by every possible demographic.
Okay. Charles Franklin, thank you for an enjoyable hour of discussion.
Thank you.
Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School Poll and professor of law and public policy at Marquette University. He's co-founder of Pollster.com and PollsandVotes.com. This program was produced by Bill Martins. Robin Cherry handled on-air production, and Christy Taylor was my director. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.